chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh, and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh, come and chat with me.
I'm very pleased to have Annika Jackson, Vice President of Public Relations and Operations at Full Capacity Marketing. As a marketer, she's done it all, basically. Experiential marketing, event production, launch marketing, public relations, digital, and influencer marketing through her multiple decade career. Annika is the founder of Your Brand Amplified, a popular podcast with over 100 episodes dedicated to all things marketing, public relations, and entrepreneurship related, and is also the creator of the Brand Amplifier program for small business owners and entrepreneurs to help develop and strengthen their branding, marketing, and PR strategies. Not only is she adjunct professor of USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, but she is a specialist in PR and marketing. So I'm super excited to chat with you tonight, Annika. So welcome.
Thank you, Nicholas. It's a pleasure to be here. I always love speaking to people who are multi-hyphenates like myself.
Yeah, well, I started out doing mass communications. So PR, I think in the olden days, mass communications, not propaganda, mass communications and corporate communications. So that's how old I am. So Annika, what I'd like to talk about today is a little bit about your background in marketing and PR. And I had a look through your LinkedIn and I saw you've worked at a variety of interesting companies. And one thing that stood out for me and why I know you are a fantastic marketer is you had to sell magazines. So you were responsible for quite an interesting magazine. And we'll touch on that in a short while. But first of all, where in the world are you?
I am in Redondo Beach, California, Pacific time. So where for you it's evening, it's about 1 p.m. in the afternoon, or 1300 hours, I guess, if you're on a 24-hour system.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 10 o'clock at night here and it's pitch black, obviously. So it's going towards winter. So as they say in Game of Thrones, winter is coming. So
And here we're getting the marine layer from the ocean. So in the mornings, it's overcast and cool. And now it's completely bright and sunny and hot. So.
Well, I live in Oslo, which is right next to the sea. But the only thing that gives it away that we're next to the sea is the seagulls. There's no smell of kelp. There's no mist coming in from the sea. So that's one thing I miss about being in a slightly warmer climate where you do actually feel like you're by the sea. Now, I want to start with how do you feel that marketing and PR has changed since you started in marketing PR? So maybe let's go back into where you started out, and then let's look at how social media and AI, et cetera, has really impacted the way we do business now.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for asking. Well, the first time I ever sent a press release, we had to type it up, print it, send it through a fax machine, and call to make sure that they got it. So it was a lot different. The idea of communicating one-to-one was still important back then, which I know on the public relations side, we've gotten a little bit away from that. People started doing mass pitching, but now people are pulling back to that one-to-one pitching. So that hasn't changed, right? The structure of a press release maybe has changed a little bit, but not in the ethos of what information you're trying to relay, how you're trying to relay it, but just the tactic, I guess, the maneuverability of how you do it. We don't have to use fax machines. We don't have to use a typewriter. Now we can just click a button. And as you mentioned, AI has really been a game changer. It's interesting because it's still the early days, I think, for the PR side of things to be using AI. But there's a lot of tools now where you can have them help generate a press release. You put in all the information, but you still need that human element. Because a lot of journalists will tell you they can tell if something's been written by a computer. So you still have to have the personalization effort. And I think that is one of the misconceptions people have around AI taking all of our jobs. For the most part, it's not going to. Now, yes, some of the jobs, journalism jobs, I do know journalists who have been affected. But when it comes to our writing, I think it's more of a tool and something we can utilize, but it can't replace the human element yet. It can't replace the relationship that we have. It's not, AI is not going to go on and correspond with a journalist over, you know, their social media and follow them on LinkedIn. I mean, might follow them on LinkedIn, but it's not going to have the same kind of conversation capability that we have. So that's one of the things that's changed. Also, the integration of strategies. There are still, of course, many, many, many large companies where things are done in silos. But for the most part, and for agile communications experts, small businesses, and entrepreneurs, you have to blend it. You have to know how to integrate your practices. Because while a lot of publicists might still say PR is for recognition of your brand, it's for awareness, it's not leading to sales, I have clients that we've gotten in major publications or even smaller publications, and they've seen the traffic increase to their website. They've seen how those links turn into marketing tools. And so that's why it's really important when you're looking at your strategy, if you're on the PR side, you need to make sure that your client or yourself is ready for that influx, that everything you're sharing on your website is the same message that I might be sharing about you when I'm talking about you to a journalist or pitching you. The same thing is what they're going to be finding on your social media. Everything needs to be part of the same cohesive message, because ultimately it is all going to lead to customer touch points and generating awareness and probably sales down the road.
You make an interesting point about PR actually being able to drive sales. Could you explain the difference between PR and advertising, perhaps, and how it fits into the customer journey, or how the customer journey fits into that process?
So PR is about building your brand awareness. So maybe you're launching a company, you're still working on the product, but you want name recognition. It could be for the founder, it could be for the product. Maybe you're coming up with an innovation. And so you're going to build awareness around what that is. Or you could be an established company. I'm thinking of like Doritos or any other company when they have a new flavor of chip that comes out. They'll do a PR strategy that involves events. They'll involve things in the cities that they're doing that new product launch in, right? They might do posters and other forms of marketing. The PR side is going to be the experiential aspect. And also, if they issue press releases, if they try to get influencers or they try to get the right people down to the stores to try the products. So while PR is on the awareness building side and it's earned media, which is also a very nuanced, I guess, area, because there are a lot of people who think, I issue a press release, it got picked up, I can see it on 300 websites. That means that they did an article. No, they didn't do an article. It means that the wire service that sent your press release out has a relationship, they pay for that space. It's not the same thing as having an article published because a journalist saw your product or service or were pitched it and said, I want to write about this, or I want to include this in an article. I want to try this out and tell my readers about it. So that is earned media. So it's not you're paying for a sponsored ad. And I think that's a distinction a lot of smaller brands and entrepreneurs don't realize, because there are a lot of PR companies that will come out and say, oh, you only have to pay for your placements, but then they get them placed in things that might have names that sound really good, but aren't considered true publications, right? There are some that have the name New York in them that are not really, it's not the New York Times, it's not the New York Post. It's not really an article that other journalists are going to look at and say, oh, I want to write about them now because they've established themselves as a brand. So on the PR side of things, we try to get you interviews. We try to get, if you have a product, we try to get it written up in publications. We try different tactics with our relationships with journalists or through systems like you and I use Podmatch, which I love, where we can really get all the information, make sure that we're pitching it correctly, right? And build up that authority. On the other side, the paid advertising side, that is any tactics that you're paying for. So that could include your digital advertising. If you are on broadcast television, commercials, if you have those kind of budgets, or even things like if you are putting posters in bus stops in your communities or billboards, that is paid advertising. So that can be awareness building as well. But then also, so sometimes there are two kinds of ad campaigns that I know that will run. So we'll run awareness building if somebody doesn't know about the project, the school or the university or the workforce development board or the entrepreneur, But then we'll also run ones that have a call to action that have a different behavior, a different psychographic, demographic aspect to those ads that we hope then people will click through, fill out a form on a landing page, or click to purchase something, get that coupon code, and get into a funnel.
I think you've given a really great breakdown, because I think people sometimes lump PR advertising together and think they're the same thing. And I want to give a quick example of how we used PR at one of the companies I used to work at called Nando's.
Oh, yeah.
And Nando's is a called a QSR, quick service restaurant, which serves flame grilled peri peri chicken. So you might not have heard about it in California, but they've opened up in DC, and they are huge. They're one of the biggest brands in South Africa, and everyone in London or the UK raves about Nando's. So I was the international brand manager, and we had a teeny tiny marketing budget, but we were known as a brand that did very risque advertising and very interesting activities. So we would always put in a small advert the next day after something happened in the news. So a president fell down the stairs, or there's a big there was some interesting thing in entertainment news or something. The next day, we would have a very quirky, very standardized ad saying with a pithy comment. And we would get more media around this tiny little advert that we did from journalists and people on Twitter and Facebook and things like that we could ever have paid for. So we tried to use PR to get written about with the journalists. And when I think of PR, I think of somebody with a little black book with relationships with PR agencies, with media agencies and journalists. Do you have a little black book, and why? And I think that ties into how AI won't take away certain jobs, because that personal relationship that you build up with a journalist or a publication can't be replicated by a machine.
Yeah, I do have my many Google Excel spreadsheets, I guess, would be my equivalent of the little black book. I have certain publications that I know I can get somebody, depending on what category they're in, because I do tend to work with a lot of startups and entrepreneurs, small businesses. So I focus more on that, and also using kind of a crawl, walk, run strategy, because many times I think people aren't comfortable being interviewed and they're not quite sure to do it. So I want to start them with some small publications, get them to really hone in their messaging, make sure that they understand what their messaging is. Then they get comfortable, and then they feel more comfortable talking about it and sharing other parts of their story and journey and things people really want to hear about. So a lot of the publications I work with could be considered on the smaller side, but I also have relationships, and there are a lot of great tools now where you can get featured in things like Time Magazine. And so it's a mix of, these days, as a PR professional, I get Substacks from journalists. I pay to be in specific groups that are journalists and publicists and other media, where we talk about things and we can collaborate, and somebody will post that they have a great client. And then, or somebody will post, oh, our show is looking for XYZ type of expert. We use a lot of inbound things, everything from Quoted to Featured to Harrow. And I also do a lot of research. And every time I want to get a client in something, I read articles for the journalist. I make sure that we're connected on LinkedIn, or that I'm at least following them on social media, so that I can make sure that what I'm seeing is what really is what they're writing about right now, that it's most relevant. If I'm pitching them for a podcast, I will look at all the information for the host. I'll listen to some of the episodes. I'll leave a review. I'll look at their website to make sure that it really is the right fit. So a lot goes into it. And also journalists are moving around all the time. There are a lot of freelance journalists. There are also people who are somebody who might be a great education contact is now in a real estate beat. So then, okay, that's not somebody I can use now or talk to about some of my clients, but let me see if maybe I have other resources for them. And because maybe they'll be back, or they'll be somewhere else. And so to me, it's not about the size of the publication necessarily. It's about the right audience and finding the right audience for your niche. And then it's also about the fact that those smaller journalists, or even a podcaster like you or me, we could end up doing something bigger on a platform, right? So I think you always have to nurture your relationships. That's what we have, right? And also, we have to stay on top of the trend. So how are journalists best receiving pitches right now? With everything going on, I don't know when this is going to be released, but with everything going on in the world, there have been a couple weeks recently when people don't want to be pitched, or they want you to be very sensitive about how you're pitching, right? And so that can sometimes go, okay, let's pivot. Let's think about what other things that we can do right now, since we know we're not going to reach out to people at the bigger publications because they're really focused on the various wars, or not have in the U.S., the fact that we can't vote on a speaker in the House, or, you know, the debt ceiling, or whatever the issue might be, depending on what country you're in. And so those are things that we have to keep a very close eye on right now. Like, I have a client who is in New York, somebody I've helped advise, who's on Good Morning America, but getting her on other things right now is a little tricky because of the timing. So we also have to think about, is this the right time? Is this the right time to pitch your product? Sometimes I've had to push back and say, this isn't going to be the right, you know, I don't know if we can get you on this. We'll try, but we should have probably started working 3 months ago for this time frame. Or I'll say, don't hire me right now. Let's start in the spring, because that Q4 timeframe with getting into the holidays, your message is going to get lost. So those are a lot of things that we have to consider that as a brand, as an entrepreneur, small business, you might not be considering, right? Because you just want to get out there right now.
I think you've brought up some very useful tips for people who are going to be adding PR as part of their marketing mix. And one of the mistakes I think lots of people make is that they could put a press release out, you can put a press release out today and the whole world's going to see it. So I think you've demystified part of that process. And it's very interesting what you're talking about in terms of the tides, basically, or the phases in a year when it's better to put out certain content and when you can actually reach somebody. So, for example, we had some clients over November, December who wanted to put out press releases. You ain't getting nobody over end of November, December. Those journalists are on holiday, or, you know, it's been booked 3 months in advance. So
exactly.
And that's, I think, the value that PR specialists bring to the tables. They understand the news flow and the right timing for these things. So that is super, super useful. You've basically gone into my next question, which is, what are the most effective ways of using PR? But I want to give you a hypothetical. I just had a call with a really interesting podcast with a young entrepreneur who was launching a software as a service AI product. And he doesn't have terribly much money for advertising. He wants to grow it by word of mouth. He doesn't want to grow it too big, too quickly. What sort of steps would you tell a bootstrapping organization who had to do PR by themselves, for example? What process should they follow, and what sort of best practices there for small companies with a great product but zero budget?
That is so common. And first of all, I want to say that the tactic that you used with your client of putting small ads in, that's so clever. And so it was a way to turn paid advertising into earned media, right? And there are some bigger brands, like you see Wendy's and some of the fast food brands on social media. They make great use of being Pythy and you know, having this great tone of voice and really reflecting their brand in their voice online, which I think is really important. So I would say, if somebody doesn't have a budget, there are still a number of things you can do. You can subscribe for free to platforms such as Featured.com. That is a fantastic new one. I have seen people get quotes in big articles, in big publications through that platform. So essentially, you put in your profile and hashtags and things you can talk about. And then sometimes journalists will reach out to you through the platform if they think that you match them. Sometimes you can also just look through and see what's on there and answer any questions that you want. You might not get picked up. For Featured, the publishers of that platform will look and they'll kind of select the best answers. They'll make sure that they're really relevant, that it's not AI generated, that it's not something that's totally off base for the question. Quoted is another one, and that's Quotd. It's another platform. You can do the same thing. You can build out your profile. So those are great ways to see what kind of requests journalists are seeking, what kind of information they're looking for. You don't have to go heavy. You can start tread lightly at first and just play around with it. But those have been great platforms to get earned media through inbound journalist requests. You can also look up hashtag journal request on Twitter, now X. People are now using that on LinkedIn as well. So you can look up, sometimes they'll say PR request or journal request as a hashtag, and you can see what journalists are looking for through their networks. I also highly recommend platforms like Podmatch. It is hands down the best podcast software I've found in terms of matching people for the right podcasts and the right guests. And now they're adding so many more capabilities, so you can see how many followers people have on both sides, how much engagement, how many downloads do episodes get. So if those are metrics that are important to your clients or to your own brand, then you know those are great ways to do it a little more cost effectively for yourself to start. But my first piece of advice is always start with a foundation. Start with, do you know who you are as a brand? Do you know who your ideal customers are? Are you online where they are? You know, have you reserved all the social media handles on everything, but you don't need to use them all because your clients and your customers are probably not on every single platform or using them every day. Get really, really good at one or two and then expand from there, right? So think about your digital footprint. Think about, and I'm sure that's something that you preach and teach a lot. So think about that. Think about the foundation that you're laying, because journalists do go check out your social media. They do check out your website, just like a customer will. They want to make sure that you are who you say you are or who somebody else is saying you are. So do all of those things as the lead up. And if you follow the right journalists, if there's some that you really love because they're writing about what you're passionate about and what your business is, comment, right? Share what they're sharing on LinkedIn. Start building up your own relationships. And that's a great way then to be able to pitch them down the road when you're ready.
Well, I couldn't have put it better, to be honest. And as you mentioned, these are the fundamentals of marketing that people sometimes forget or haven't heard about or just don't consider. And a lot of these businesses are bootstrapped. So one person is doing 20 jobs. So at some stage, they need to bring in the professionals like yourself to come and take them to that next level. Now, you spoke about Podmatch, which I also love. I've met some amazing people through Podmatch. But you've done over 100 podcasts. And I'm going to shift gears a little bit now. And because I'm going through my own podcast journey now, I'll hit 100 relatively soon. But I want to see, if you had to go back to when you first started your podcast, so let's look at podcast 0 to 10. What would you tell Annika podcast season one versus what you're doing now? What is the, and I'm doing this for sneaky reasons. I'm going to steal some ideas, but hopefully other people, again, as because we're teachers, we want to help people avoid mistakes and leapfrog and be better than us, obviously.
Oh, 100%. Well, and my journey to podcasting, I hosted 2 podcasts for clients before I started my own because I had a radio show and Facebook Live show previously and then moved from Houston to Los Angeles right before the pandemic. And then it was too hard for everybody to get on and continue the show. So then those clients knew that I'd done that. What I found, though, was they didn't really have the budget to be consistent. So for me, when I started my journey to my own podcast, it was more because my partner said, who's an editor and filmmaker, said, well, why are you not just doing your own? You know how to do this. You've produced other people's. You've hosted other people's. So just do your own. And I said, yeah, I should just do that. So I started. I was very rigid at first. I was only going to interview PR people. I wanted to keep it within U.S. drive time. So I think that was 27 or 37 minutes at the time, pre-pandemic. I had 5 to 10 questions, going to ask the same things to everybody. And that didn't feel good to me, and because it didn't help the conversation flow. I don't like to overplan when I'm doing my episodes. I like it to be like you, like a very organic conversation where we're really getting to explore. And who knows, we have some questions, but we might also go off on some tangents because that might be more interesting and more valuable to our listeners. So it was, you know, every experience is new. So even though I had done podcasting or had done radio before, starting a new one is going to be a little different. And I was not consistent with it. It was more of, I'm just going to do this for fun. It was only when I started being consistent and releasing at least one episode a week that my audience grew and that I was given more opportunities and able to get guests that were not just my clients or my friends and connections. And I've recorded probably about 230 episodes now. So it keeps evolving, right? Most episodes do come in to a certain time frame, which I find is like ideal. Some go a little bit longer, some go a little bit shorter. My episodes are all over the place, so you can pick up any one at any time. You don't have to follow them because I might have an expert come talk about feng shui for your office or manifestation or EFT tapping to help you, you know, with your anxiety when it comes to business and life practices. But also somebody might be talking about lead gen, who's the number one lead gen expert for LinkedIn, or the best practices for SEO or AI or any number of things. And so it keeps me interested and engaged. I'm always learning things. I think it also makes it interesting for the listener. It makes them want to come back because it's not going to be the same information over and over again. And so that's a lot, but it really is. Once I built up the consistency, once I said, okay, I'm really going to pour into myself this way. And now I am, for instance, I have a call today with a new ethical AI company that's doing conversational AI. They want to take my podcast episodes and use them for their language modeling and pay me to do that, right? So then that can pay some of the costs that I pay out of pocket for production and tools and resources that I use. Now it's streaming as a TV show on Traverse TV, and I haven't moved that. Traverse also has a broadcast in Florida, but I would have to like change my episodes a little bit to be more TV centric, but I can still have them as is, as the video is, on a streaming TV platform. It's also going on other platforms. So I'm able to expand and reach new audiences. And that's great for me. It's great for my guests. And podcasting also, the SEO value. I got my .com for Your Brand Amplified because of podcasting, because I'm appearing on other people's podcasts. So I took over from the person who had the .com version of my website, who was a brand marketer, I think, in Australia. Because they were pushed down and they were not getting, maybe people were going to their website thinking they were going to find me. So they eventually gave it up. Well, that was fantastic for me. And it's also helped me propel my career in academia and with my own clients.
The advance, I mean, you don't go into podcasting to make money. I think it's sorry, the top percentage who do that. But you talk about the skills and enjoyment. I mean, the fun that I have talking to people smarter than me or better than me in specific areas is so much fun because I'm teaching now. I've got to try and distill big ideas that I'm not necessarily specialist in. But when I talk to somebody like you on PR, it means that tomorrow when I talk to my class, I can say, you know, I chatted to somebody really interesting yesterday, and these are some of the points that they brought. So it's so valuable for me as a teacher to be able to take the best in class or best in practice and go and give that to my class for them to use immediately. So it's been tremendously valuable for students and folks like that, which I really love.
Do you have your students listen to your podcast? I have my students listen to an episode of my podcast, or if I have a guest, an episode of their podcast, and then they have to write about it and write about what they learned and talk about it in class.
So that would be the ideal situation if I could get them to write an essay. most of them are subscribed to it and do listen to it and give feedback, which is good. They see me every day of the week except Thursday. So I want to give them a bit of a pause so that they don't dream of my voice at night. But it's interesting in terms of trying to figure out the format or the length of the episodes is interesting because I thought, well, most of my episodes go to about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's a bit long. People, I'm sure, are going to tap out after a while. But I had one of my subscribers say they use my podcast to time their morning run. So they listen to me while they're having their morning run, and that's 40 minutes and that's enough for them. So, amazing. You know, it's very good to get feedback on your listeners. Now, my last question I've actually got two last questions for you. So you're a teacher. Has there been anything fun other than them transcribing your podcast in the class that you've done in your class that I could steal for my class?
Well, I don't know if you could steal this yet because this semester I'm teaching PR and branding. But what I had the students do for their midterm is distill their personal brands. So we walked through How do you build your brand, brand blueprint, purpose, vision, mission, values, brand personality, identity, taglines, story, you know, how to build out a story framework for your key messaging, and then use the PESO model to create at least one integrated campaign. And it was probably one of the more difficult things for them to do because most they're used to getting assignments to distill other brands, but not the brand of me. But what we're finding is that personal branding in the workplace is really the differentiator these days. I have students who've been laid off twice this year. You know, the job market, there's jobs out there, but it's not easy to get a job or to get your ideal job. So the more you know about yourself and your personal brand, the better you are able to sell yourself to your ideal customer persona, who, i.e. your ideal boss of whatever company you want to work for, or, you know, depending on, I have students who want to go into health or finance or beauty, lifestyle, CPG, or entertainment, or athletes. So they will be able to create these messages to know how to message or how to create a campaign for that person. And I feel like that also will better equip them to be great communications experts in the future, because they can take the same strategy, the same framework, and apply it to the companies that they work with. And so they'll look at it from a different lens.
Well, that principle of knowing yourself, especially when you get into leadership roles, is so important. Being comfortable knowing what you stand for, what your mission and vision, et cetera, is. I think if you can bed that down early on in your career, it will make life much, much more smooth sailing as you go along. If I can just share one of the activities that we do in class, because during COVID, a lot of our students were stuck at home, not engaging with people, not standing up in front of class. So we do something called Just a Minute, and it's taken from a British radio program where you have to talk for 1 minute without pausing, hesitating, repeating, or ums or ahs. And they're two teams, and they've got to say beep as soon as somebody says or repeats. And it is just fantastic for getting them to talk smoothly, slow down how they speak, and be able to talk on any subject. So the subject, for example, could be why ants could be your best friend. And then from no, you've got to talk for 1 minute. Well, ants are very small, and it's just interesting getting the creative juices flowing. So you should try that one day. It's great. It's great fun.
I love that. Yeah. That sounds really fun.
Good. Well, Annika, thank you so much for spending time with me this evening. It's been really interesting. And I think the point you made on PR should get people thinking about how they can use PR for their own, either their own personal strategies for building their businesses. And that idea of paid versus earned media is a very important distinction, which I think you cleared up very nicely. So it's been a pleasure having you, and I hope to hear from you again.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nicholas.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh, and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth.